Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is, as you know, is Wes McGee. I live here in Grand Haven, as Rod was telling you. I've been here, my wife and I, 11 years. I'm originally from Minneapolis, Minnesota, and this was quite a unique experience for me to come to Grand Haven, only because it's reminded me of this hometown that you saw in my bio. Same population back in 1947 to present, 11,000 under people then, and it's less now. Same type of environment, but separately, different, quite a bit different culturally, because I grew up in segregation. That was the most wonderful part of my life, because all of us who live in a segregated life had our own everything. Our own communities, our own churches, our own entertainment, schools, whatever the case is. So everybody got to know everybody. Also in my hometown, there was whites living within our neighborhood and our community. So everybody kind of knew everybody, everybody looked out for everybody. We didn't speak hardly to each other, except for a very few in the neighborhood. But we all kept watch for everyone. If there was a problem, somebody new coming in, but nobody was a stranger, whatever the case is. So no one like here really robbed your house or took your property or whatever the case was, okay? It was just as is. And that was that way until we, 1954, Brown versus Board of Education, Topeka versus the Brown family in integrating schools, NAACP set that motion off. But actually, it was over wages. Should black teachers have the same wages as whites? And they flipped the switch. I don't know how they did it, why they did it, or the outside forces who were supporting the NAACP, since it was not founded by black people, mostly governed what the legal, NAACP Legal Defense Fund, took and retwisted around. And Thurgood Marshall and others from Howard University, you know, flipped the switch on it, and then it came out the way it came out to integrate the schools. As you also read, and I'm giving this out to you in the audience so you kind of understand where I'm coming from at the beginning here, is that all the black teachers and administrators were terminated across the board. Our middle class, gone, disappeared. Over 40 to 50,000, some cases 60,000 people lost their job across the country, primarily in the South and the border states, up, as I would say, at the Mason-Dixon line, from Maryland all the way over to Colorado. So that's Kansas, Oklahoma, Texas, Gulf of Mexico, and all the way around back up to Maryland. So anyone in that boundary, all the teachers, administrators, schools were closed, everything. And there was nothing for them to do. So there was another migration. In my case, with my mother, she went back to school, but before that, she had to get a job. Now, let me give something go on. My mother taught for 50 years before she retired. Of that, 2/3 was within a black community. Also, she was a principal, Kansas, Oklahoma, teacher, principal, worked the taught class in basements of schools. In Chanute, Kansas, they all had everybody, all the black kids who lived under town, classrooms were in the basement. So she taught from kindergarten to whatever until kids went up to what, middle school and to high school. So she was primarily a elementary teacher. And her last job before the Brown versus decision, Supreme Court decision, was at Leonard Paul, Oklahoma, which is 13 miles south of where I grew up at. So she used to travel both ways, back and forth. And so she was in high school and junior high, all in one building. So she taught 7th, 8th, and 9th grade. So a black teacher, educator, administrator would teach everything. It was called upon to do that, and that's how it was. When she went back to school, Pittsburgh State Teachers College, in Pittsburgh, Kansas, she got a master's degree and an updated certificate to teach in Kansas. But my hometown, Coffeyville, would not let or allow any black teachers to teach, number one. They refused to have that to happen. So all the black teachers that was living in Coffeyville, and there was about 30-some educators, had to leave. Now, that was devastating to a lot of people. us kids didn't know what we wanted to do, but we had to, you know, you always got to follow your parents. So it happened. Resumes went out, interviews came, and my mom and dad chose Minneapolis. My mother's co-worker, and she, her husband was the principal of Lenape, Mrs. English, she said, "Ruby, this is the best place to raise your kids. Come on up here. You'll freeze to death, but but your kids will have one of the most valuable educations you'll ever know. It's not going to be like Los Angeles. It's not going to be like San Francisco. It won't be like New York or any other place. This place has it all. It's small enough, big enough, and you can have a car without going all over, but you're going to have to get winter clothing." Okay. Went up, interviewed, got the job. Because Minneapolis was having an explosion of new people coming in, particularly so black families. And the superintendent and others decided, don't forget, Humphrey was what, senator? And in the 40s, he was mayor, and then he had a major civil rights push back then, and he kept it going for a long time. So the Democrats, the farm, and the labor groups came together. That was important because nobody organizes, and as you know, farmers are primarily Republicans. But in Minnesota, with the Finns and the Swedes and God knows what else from Eastern Europe, all got together in the labor, principally the miners from the mining area where Bob Dylan and all those came from. You know, all those people got together and had the DFL, Democratic Farm Labor. And it was a very tight-knit group, and a coalition of all those groups put Minnesota on the map. And so in Minneapolis, where he was mayor, all that, you know, came together. So from 1960 onward, my education took place from junior high, high school, a little bit in college, and everything else. And everything began to happen. Now, I'm using this as coming into because, as you all pretty well know, by 1966, 66, 67, there was a racial unrest across the country, principally determined by the police, late at night over some minor incident or traffic incident, usually how it starts, three blocks and stop, tail light or something. And so in various cities, whatever happened, things got out of hand, and let's call it what it is, riots, so-called riots or insurrection kind of things began to happen. So it affected everyone and everybody, primarily because there was no outlet for jobs. Now, integration, when I say no outlet for jobs, integration means you integrate into a society that is not of your own. And that was the mantra of the day, of the time. You know, you had the civil rights movement in the South. You had whatever else was going on in the North. But the two was, I'm not saying in conflict, but you had two different sets of standards that was going on, particularly so in the South. So we're pretty much on that. But I'm going to end on that note only because I want to pick up kind of what Leslie was mentioning where her folks, her grandfather came out of, in a different way. In the spring of 1945, emerging from the nightmare, the world discovered camps, the death factories, the senseless horror, the debasement and absolute reign of evil, victory tastes of ashes. Yes, it is possible to define life and creation and feel no remorse, to tend one's garden, to water one's flowers, but two steps away from barbed wire, to experiment with monstrous mutations and still believe in the soul of immortality, to go on vacation, to enthrall by the beauty of the landscape, make children laugh, and still fully, regularly, day in and day out, the duties of killer. There was then a technique, a science of murder, complete with specialized laboratories, business meetings, and progress charts. Those engaged in this practice did not belong to the gutter society of misfits, nor could they be dismissed as just a collection of rabble. Many held degrees in philosophy, sociology, biology, general medicine, psychiatry, and the fine arts. They were lawyers among them, and unthinkable but true theologians and aristocrats. This was, in my studies of going into Black history, again, this is shortly after the rebellions and insurrection movements in the cities, was by a Black author. I don't know his name, but it came to us as I was 17, 18 years old, and maybe 19, when all this was going on. In other words, not knowing and looking at and finding out who I am as a Black person. I had a wonderful middle school, high school experience because, as you read, went to school with everyone and everybody. That could not happen in Coffeyville. People with Eastern religions, Eastern Orthodox, Puerto Ricans, whites, Jewish, Protestant, Catholics, everybody was there. My eighth grade homeroom teacher, social science teacher, Mrs. Swartz, was from New York, and she's of the Jewish religion. Mrs. Swartz and I really liked each other because she said, "Wesley, where are you from?" And I said, "Mrs. Swartz, I'm from Coffeyville, Kansas." "Where's that at?" And I would tell her, and she says, "Oh, is there very many colors there?" And I said, "No, we're leaving, you know, we're leaving because there's nothing there for us to do anymore." So that's why my mother's a teacher. "Your mother's a teacher?" I said, "Yes, ma'am." And she would say, and we have a long talk about it. So she called my mother. That's what teachers did in those days. They would talk to each other. And so they would communicate, and she said, "My mother, or your mother, told me to watch out for you. And if you get into trouble, I'm to call her. And she will take care of everything." And I know what that meant. You get pinched under the arms, okay? And that hurts. You know, I'm still a little boy, you know, and everything else, but that's what's going on. So the reason why I dealt with that, because some of the things that I saw in Nazi Germany and what's going on in Poland and Ukraine and everything else, and the consolidation of things coming together and what I see politically, is beginning to happen all over again. So we think that we were moving away, but history has a way of coming back, double backing around and doubling up on everything. So my talk today is spirituality before religion. I'm going to say this, and it's going to be very honest, because some of you are going to have questions. Back in the day, not knowing, I come out of the Baptist tradition, let's put it that way, the Black church. I thought that was there was something going on with it because, you know, it was just every Sunday you went. And when we moved to Minneapolis, same thing. Every Sunday you go to church. And your parents made sure that you did. But there was always something missing. That's something that whatever was missing. Because when I say integration, there are certain things that's being left out. You don't know who, what, where you come from, how you got here, what took place, how it was able to take place, and what is your role in it. And that's the main thing. What is your role in society? What role are you going to play as a Black male, as a Black female? You know, what are you about? And you don't get to know that. It's one of the things that most parents really begin to, you know, they don't know themselves, that we found out as time went on. So in religion, so when you have Sunday school and you begin to ask your teachers or instructors about the Bible, they don't know. You come to find out they don't read the Bible, or they don't really study the Bible. They haven't read it. They can't interpret it. And so us teenagers were sitting there going like, if they don't know, then who do we go to? And so you had brothers and sisters, as we would call them, what we call today Africana studies or African study groups and everything else. So that was formed. And it was an organization called The Way. And we had a professor that comes in, and he, you know, so we began to learn what is African history and what is African-American history and what is global African history, all into one. And who are we here in the United States? Who are we on the continent? And who are we and where are we from on the globe? So the main question that came out of us as young people was, what is religion? He was talking spirituality. We'll give you a little definition of what I'm talking about here. Spirituality before religion derives deeply into many ideas researched by many brilliant writers and scholars. My ultimate purpose is to synthesize these writings into a comprehensive study of ancient African deep thought with Taset, the Kemetic Egyptian process. When I use the word Kemet, it means Egyptian, the ancient word for original word, as people call themselves, Kemetians. The Greeks used the word, or can't coin the word, Egyptian. The process of accurately reckoning by using the correct method of analysis, which is clear and precise philosophy, guided early humanity into the heavens on earth while creating a heaven on earth. Our African educator, Dr. John Henry Clark, teaches us that to be self-sufficient, people must have to see the Creator when they look in the mirror. If not, they will never have a healthy self-concept, he reminds us. Anytime you turn on your own concept of God, you are no longer a free man or woman. No one needs to put chains on your body because the chains are on your mind. And that's important because the change in image of psychological slavery. This is what the heart and soul and the kernel, this whole thing is about, your mind. Free your African mind. And that came about when I went to New York City to a lecture and met up with a group of people over time, because all of this began to work on me, you know, what is my foundation as to who I am, where I am, where I'm coming from. And that basically led me into a lot of different things. Let me continue here. Anytime someone says their God is ugly and they release their God and embrace someone else's God, there's no hope for their freedom until they once more believe in their own concept of deity. Alvin Boyd Kuhn wrote an excellent book called Who is This King of Glory? Alvin, A-L-V-I-N, Boyd, B-O-Y-D, K-U-H-N. Over time, I read the book. Blew me away. Because who is this King of Glory? Born in the United States, what happened was we began to find out what was the problem within the Black community, as it not only here in the United States, but what's going on in Africa. That led to me learning and spending a great deal of resources and time as I went through my education process, careers, and everything else. I built a library for myself. So, you know, I went from Egyptian volumes, Jewish history, female history, the right-wing history, economic, politics, sex, war, slavery, where did everything, economics, the whole thing. So I have over about 2,000 books. And 1,200 to 2,000 books, and still reading and producing a lot of information. But moving here to Grand Haven, going back to where I'm coming back here with spirituality before religion, it settled me in, because when you retire, you now begin to find out more deeply what is really the kernel of things. And what I'm trying to get to is like to have you all understand where I'm at and where I'm coming from and what's happening really, what's going on in the Black community in a certain sense, is spirituality is unseen science, and science within us as African people is seen as scientific. Now, that may seem like a contradiction, but it's not. Because when you study science, you're seeing something spiritually happening by what's coming out of science in our cosmology within the African thought and African concept. And it's how, if you look at, as an example, George Washington Carver was an agronomist, Tuskegee Institute. He helped Henry Ford, understand how to automate his factory, okay? By studying what is a manufacturing plant called? A plant, right? The concept of that came from George Washington Carver because he studied plants. Henry Ford named his facilities where they manufactured cars plants Because as a plant grows from a seed to the finished product and it's assembled along the way, it began to nurture and produce all kinds of things that comes after out of that. He also, the paint of coming out of the peanut is created out of that. So Henry Ford took the process from Carter and reformulated in his laboratories and be able to paint, besides black, but other colors that he did not want to use at the time, but that was a process that he wanted to do. So, but if you understand, also Henry Ford also contributed to Tuskegee Institute, but they did not have a patent office. So Tuskegee never could really grow, even though it was a forerunner of MIT. No matter how emotionally and how frantically the worshiper pours adoration to a person in objective life, the work of his own evolution is not accomplished until he utilizes divinity of the nuclear potentially fired within his own self-control and the areas of his self-consciousness. That's what got me when I read Alvin Boyce Kuhn's book, because the distortion of truth began to come out. And that truth began to have a different setting. There's another two-volume set, actually it's a six-volume set, Ancient Egypt, Light of the World, Book of the Beginnings, and Natural Genesis. What are we talking about here? What is and where did all the religions or things that you concept of like Buddha from and other Judaism, Christianity, Islam, all of these religions that we see out here, all of them are a concept of African gods or out of Nile Valley civilizations, every last one of them. When you get into this and study it and do the researching and the documentation is all there, fully there, the thing that's holding every one of us back as our historians and intellectuals are saying, well, what is white supremacy and how is white supremacy holding us back? We see the manifestation of that today. They want to ban books. They want to do this, do that. They don't want to educate even their own children. So people are beginning to step back or beginning to really question. Even locally here, as I read letters to the editor from the mayor from the previous Jerry McCabe's article, people are stepping back and begin to question, hey, you know, something's going on here. I don't like what I'm hearing. I don't like what I'm seeing. The thing is happening, the same thing within us. And so within that, why am I looking at the big picture? Because if I am not free in my mind or to know the questions of what's going on, how will I understand what's really happening out here? And how can I address you, stand before you? Plus, on top of that, be able to see and live in a community that's, 98% white, have a lot of, met some wonderful people, and do the things I need to do and not be fearful. Fear can really contain you, because I see it when I look at the people in what's the country again? Ukraine, thank you. Because I can see the fear. I know that fear. Coffeyville taught us that at one incident we had down there. Fear can, when it manifests itself, you can't move forward. And when I understood the factors of religion versus spirituality, what is African spirituality, then that began to change, because my wife looked at me and she says, well, what about me? I'm white. What are you going to do? I said, that doesn't bother me. That is your color. It's what's in your mind. I'm looking at what is in your mind. I know your culture. I know your history. I know how you're going to act and react. Therefore, but I want to know what's in your mind. I can see that because I took the proper mechanism to research what it is I need to know in order for me to get out here to do what I need to do. So I'm not going to be afraid. So I won't be afraid when I go here, go there, do whatever I need to do, and I can be who I want to be. And that's different. And therefore, I can march on. So with that, I'm going to open up the floor for any questions that you may have. What's that? Take a time? Okay. No problem. Gotcha. Okay, I'm going to end this right now on that point because I want to let you know that before I go, there's a book that I'm referencing from. It's called Spirituality Before Religion. It's by Professor Kaba, K-A-B-A, Hiawatha, Kamene, K-A-M-E-N-E. And if you want to work with me on that, I also have another book by him, the Sivabaka Stone, and that he also is writing. So I'm going from the text I learned earlier into the more higher spirituality factor that is where I'm, where I'm at, and that's where I'm going. So I hope to see some of you all in the Q&A area. Thank you very much for inviting me.